is. Good morning, church. Bye, kiddos. They're always like, ch-ch-ch-ch. Good morning. Happy sunny. It does not feel like winter at all, but this sunny Sunday. So glad you are here with us. I just have a few announcements to share. First of all, I'm Denise, first of all. We'll start with that. If I have not met you, I would love to meet you. I'm part of the dwelling team here. But if you are new-ish, or you've just never filled out a Connect card, I would invite you to do that. I promise we won't, like, stalk you, harass you, or share your information. We just genuinely want to connect with you, hear your heart, hear your story, hear what you're looking for in a church family, how we can get you connected, and share a little bit about who we are as well. So you can find those kind of sprinkled around the seats around you, or you can grab a Connect card at the table right there, and then just stick it in the joy boxes. You'll see one on the side and one in the back, and we'll be in touch. It's also a great way to share prayer requests for anyone. So if you have any prayer requests as well, you can put those on Connect cards, and we are honored to pray with you, pray for you. A few things coming up. This is kind of an exciting time for the church, kind of liturgical calendar. We are approaching this week Ash Wednesday, which then leads into the 40 days, kind of preparing our hearts through the Lent season for Easter, which is the greatest thing that we celebrate in the course of the calendar year as Christians, where we celebrate the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. So a few things to put on your calendar. Starting this Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, we are going to have on Wednesday mornings, bright and early. I don't know, how many of you are morning people? I'm definitely not raising my hand for that question, but this is going to be bright and early, a great way to start your Wednesday during this season. 6:45 here at the Boys and Girls Club, we're going to have a time of worship, prayer, just kind of refocusing and calibrating our hearts during the Lent season. So again, starting this Wednesday, Ash Wednesday, we are going to have that on Wednesday morning. So we invite you to participate with that. It still says 2:18. Last week it was 3:18, and I had to be the annoying voice in the back that was like, it's wrong. Okay, 2:18, we're starting that. But also during this 40 days leading up to Easter, we're doing a few different things that we invite you to pray about, what this looks like in your rhythms, your schedule. So we are going to be calling it the 40 days of prayer and fasting. That does not mean you do not eat a single thing for 40 days, because you will end up in the hospital. What we invite you to do is just pray about what this looks like. Maybe it's a meal every day. Maybe it's one day a week that you fast, and pray about what the Lord is putting on your heart to fast. It can look, I mean, traditionally it's food, but fasting can look a lot of different ways, and the heart behind it is just creating space for the things that we seek comfort, the things that we numb ourselves with, that we fill our times with, and instead of turning to those things, we really create space to lean into God, lean into His Spirit, see what He wants to prepare in us and speak to us during this season. So 40 days of prayer and fasting starting this Wednesday, so pray about what that looks like. We also are inviting you to do a 7-day digital detox. I know for a lot of us, we're kind of in front of screens all the time, and some of it we can't avoid because you need a paycheck maybe. I know that's me. I sit at a computer all day. But pick a 7-day period and what that looks like for you, maybe limiting your phone, not doing like Candy Crush. I do puzzles on my phone, you guys. I'm an old lady. I love puzzles. And then so I talked about Wednesdays, and then we're going to have a Good Friday experience. So that is on April 3rd. We're going to gather here on that Friday and have just a more contemplative service where we can just prepare our hearts for Easter Sunday. And then, of course, we have Easter. So Easter is always one of those times, too, where I find people are much more open to maybe going to church and kind of become curious about who is Jesus and what is He really about. And so maybe be praying, too, during these 40 days of who you can invite to Easter Sunday as well. So got all that? I know that's a lot, you guys, but we're excited. We're excited what God's going to be doing in this season. A couple other things just to put on your radar. So the guys, there's a guys community group on Thursday mornings. They meet every other week, and that kicked off 2 weeks ago. So they will be meeting this week at a really classy establishment called Denny's. Have you guys heard of it? Mediocre coffee, excellent community. So show up. That is at 6 a.m. at Denny's on Thursday. And then there's two more groups starting. So Teresa, if you guys don't know Teresa, do you want to wave your hand, Teresa, in case people have questions? She's going to be starting an 11-week series on Sunday nights, and it is called Called to More. And I know she is more than happy to share her heart behind that series, but just really evaluating the purpose that God has called you to and who you are as a child of God. And so that's going to be a really great series at her house. You can get information on our website if you're curious about that, or talk to Teresa as well. So that starts this upcoming Sunday on the 22nd. And then we are also starting just a general women's community group. And for now, it's going to be monthly. We're going to meet the last Sunday of the month. And it's going to be here for now. We'll kind of revisit if we want to meet somewhere else. But for now, we're going to meet here at the Boys and Girls Club Sundays at 6 p.m. And I am more than happy to answer questions about that one as well. So, okay, I'm going to be done. No, I'm not going to be done talking. There's one more thing. It's the giving. Everyone's favorite part. You know, actually, I was reading this morning in Exodus, and it hit me fresh. God was talking to the Israelites, right? They were wandering the desert, and God wanted them to participate and create a tabernacle where he could dwell with them. And of course, anytime I see dwell or dwelling in the Bible, it's like, ding. And I was reading, and over again, God kept inviting them, if you are willing, give out of what you have. And for some people, it looked like giving wood. For some people, it's giving like fabric and cloths. And for some people, it was giving gold and silver and stones. And it was just really incredible, because you look and you see there's this population of people, and they gave willingly, and they gave what they had. And God used that collaboration to create this dwelling where he could literally be, his presence could be with them. And it could be a sign to the peoples around them that God was with these people. And I just think that's the same invitation we have. We give out of what we have, what God has given us. We give back to him. And then together, God takes that, and he creates this really beautiful dwelling place. And so I invite you to kind of pray about that, too, how maybe God is prompting you to give towards the dwelling here, what God is doing in Carson City. So a couple ways to give: website. We have our app, the Church Center app, as well as the joy boxes that I've mentioned before in the back and on the side. So we're going to read the word this morning. I invite you to stand if you are willing and able. And I don't have my phone, so I'm just going to read off of the slide. We are going to be, what's the passage, babe? Well, it doesn't give the light. There we go. Thank you. Luke 15. We're going to be in Luke 15, y'all, starting in verse 11. It says, and he said, there was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the share of my property that is coming to me. And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living. And when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country, who sent him into his fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. But when he came to himself, he said, how many of my father's hired servants have more than enough bread? But I perish here with hunger. I will arise and go to my father, and I will say to him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Treat me as one of your hired servants. And he rose and came to his father. But while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and felt compassion. And he ran and embraced him and kissed him. And the son said to the father, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father said to his servant, bring quickly the best robe and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand and shoes on his feet, and bring the fattened calf and kill it, and let us eat and celebrate. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found, and they began to celebrate. This is the word of the Lord.
All right. Good morning, everybody. It's good to be with you all. My name is Michael, if I haven't met you yet, one of the pastors here. I want to start by reading something to you real quick. A father recounts a story about his adopted daughter and a situation that came up as they planned a trip to Disneyland. She had come from a family who had plans to adopt her, but for some unknown reason, they would take their biological kids and leave her home when they went to Disneyland. Eventually, they gave up on the adoption, so his family, this father's family, adopted her when she was 8. This father and his family made their own plans to take this trip to Disneyland. During the process leading up to it, the daughter began to act up. Even though she was invited on the trip, she did not believe it. When she got into trouble, she said, I know you're not going to bring me, are you? Eventually, she calmed down once they physically made the trip. After that first day, this father asked her about her experience. And in her emotional response, she said this. She said, "Daddy, I finally got to go to Disneyland. But it wasn't because I was good. It was because I'm yours." We're starting a series today in what we like to call the parable of the prodigal son. We're going to look at this for over the next few weeks. We're going to kind of break it down, and we're going to look at each of the three characters, the main characters in this story, and kind of just unpack why Jesus chose to use this story, why he chose to use these characters in the story, and ultimately, like, to kind of examine each character and understand what it's revealing to us about the heart of God. And ultimately, to understand God better and our relationship to him. And so that's kind of where we're going. Maybe for some of us, this is a refresher. We've heard this story before. And maybe this is just an opportunity to be refreshed in our hearts and our souls about what we believe and why. But in order to understand that story, we need to understand two things. One, we need to know what a parable is, if you don't know what that is. So we're going to break that down. And we also need to know what prodigal means. We got to look at those two things. So first, let's look at what a parable is. And according to Tim Keller, who is a lot smarter than I am, he says this: a parable is a subversive story. In this case, told about Jesus, designed to break down conventional religious thinking and to reveal the radical nature of grace, to confront the immoral and moralistic hearts. Rather than just mere moral tales, though, it is actually, they act as diagnostic tools that expose matters of the heart. That's the idea behind parables. But what's interesting is parables actually were not exclusive to followers of Jesus, to Christians or to Jews. It was actually a pretty common practice within the oral tradition of first century Palestine to use these types of methods, because they did a lot of things. One, they illuminated things, and when they wanted to, they could actually kind of blind people to different things. It's almost like, you know, they could tell stories of like inside jokes, and then people around them might not exactly pick up what they're putting down, if that makes sense. And so they had two different purposes to it. But in this case, we're looking at the parable that we call the prodigal son. Actually, that word prodigal is not in the Bible. So I don't know if you knew that, but the word prodigal is something that was associated to this parable much later. It actually probably is better phrased the parable of the lost son, or maybe even more accurately, even the lost two sons. And we're going to look at that over the next 3 weeks. So if you will with me, just pray real quick, and then we're going to jump in. God, thank you for this time together. Thank you for this space to worship you. No matter where we're coming from, I just ask you to prepare our hearts for what you have to say. In Jesus' name, amen. Is there a little bit of reverb going on, Matt? No? Okay. Okay, so today we are looking at the first character, which is the younger son. We're going to break it down. We're going to kind of analyze his story, and then we're going to kind of draw some conclusions from that. So this whole parable, to start, is motivated by a very specific situation that rose in the very beginning. And I want to read that first in verses 1 and 2. Jesus was starting to meet with people. And it says, "Now the tax collectors and sinners were drawing near to him. And the Pharisees and the scribes begin to grumble. And they said this, 'This man receives sinners and he eats with them.'" So this word sinners is kind of funny because it's just kind of a lazy junk drawer word that is being used here. Maybe not lazy by Luke, but lazy by the Pharisees and the religious leaders, just to kind of lump people together. And it's basically better translated outsiders or even foreigners. That's really what's happening. It's people that these Pharisees don't know and don't recognize from their own culture. So the language and labels used for these two people groups don't seem very significant to us necessarily. You're like, tax collectors, yeah, that doesn't sound great. I certainly wouldn't want somebody to come by my house picking up extra money. But it doesn't carry a lot of weight for us, does it? But the truth was, tax collectors were very, very controversial people. They were actually Jews that were employed by Rome to collect a tax from the people because they were living in the domain of Rome. And what would happen is that these tax collectors would start to get a little itch to like maybe collect a little bit more than they were supposed to. And so they would go by and they would go to these houses and they would take the tax that belonged to Caesar, which was already a lot, and then all of a sudden the next week that money, that price would go up. And they would be like, "Are you kidding me right now? Like, what is the deal?" And they're like, "I'm just doing what I'm told." And they would take the money and then they would put some in their own pocket. And the truth was, the elephant was in the room as everybody knew it. And all of a sudden, these Jewish tax collectors would get very, very wealthy off of them for no reason. So the other side of it is, you know, again, when we say foreigners or when we say sinners, obviously that's like, okay, we can get a good idea what that means. But there is some weight that we need to actually attribute to these two parties before we jump into our story this morning. Because this actually would have been very, very scandalous for Jesus. Being a Jewish leader, being a rabbi, being somebody who was starting to gain a lot of influence and reach and power in the sense of who he was talking to and the authority, like, how dare somebody who has that place start to associate himself with people that he really had no business associating himself with? So for us, we have to understand how we can attribute this and make more sense of it. So this is what I would retranslate this for the 21st century. Now, the insurance company executives and the big pharma executives were all drawing near to Jesus. Here's another one. Now, the conservatives and the liberals were all drawing near to Jesus. Here's another one. Are you ready? Now, the undocumented immigrant and the ICE agents were all drawing near to Jesus. That one carries a little weight. And I think that's important for us this morning to start there. Because, and it might make us a little uncomfortable even. You can fill in the blank with whoever you seem to associate with being scandalous or controversial. The Bible is full of moments where God not only encourages us, but also moments where he upsets us. Because there's things that God does that make us uncomfortable. And there is also a message for the world that sometimes we have a hard time wrapping our minds in. The Pharisees are upset because Jesus is making space at the table for people that should be judged and excluded from the religious leader standpoint. And Jesus completely disregards that and creates space at the table. So in light of that, that's context for where we're going this morning in this story. Let's read real quick in verses 11 and 12. It says, Jesus says, "There was a man who had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, 'Father, give me the share of property that is coming to me.' And he divided his property between them. Not many days later, the younger son gathered all he had and took a journey into a far country. And there he squandered his property in reckless living." That's a nice way to say it. So I want to stop here for a second. So when he says the share of the property, this whole thing, the younger son, basically what he's doing right now is he is basically kind of going to his dad. Typically what would happen is if a father passed away, they would receive a notice because they may not be on the property and they didn't exactly have cell phones and WhatsApp or anything like that. So they'd have to send a notice wherever the sons were and ship that out. And what would happen is if the father died, they would get this notice, and the older son would get two-thirds, and the younger son would get one-third of the property. If there were more sons to that, they'd obviously have to redo the math on that. But in this case, the younger son would still receive one-third of the property. But here's what's interesting about this situation. It's very significant this morning. The father's not dead. So, and yet, the son goes to his father and says, "I am demanding that you give me my inheritance now." What's interesting about this is basically the equivalent of the son basically saying to the father, I wish you were dead. You're as good as dead to me. And so it's as if he would rather have his stuff, his you know, what the world that's in front of him, right? The opportunities that he could have versus being under the care and the guidance of his loving father. You know, you have to believe that there's been some time with this, right? All we see in the story is that immediately out the gate, Jesus says, yeah, this kid wanted his inheritance. He wanted to go. But we have to believe that if we were kind of reading into the story, that this didn't just happen overnight. That this is something that was going for a while, that this was kind of a slow drift away from his father's heart and his father's care. Every day, and this is kind of where we're going with this morning. Every day, we have a decision to make. Whether to follow God, to trust him, and to listen to his words, or ignore them and drift away. And ultimately, this is the human condition, isn't it? This is the human struggle. And it's this meets the road with us as creation in relation to the Creator. Is that we think at times that we know best. The sin of pride is what the Bible calls it. The sin of pride that has been a challenge from the beginning. Let's keep moving through the story. Verse 14. It says, when he had spent everything, a severe famine arose in that country, and he began to be in need. So he went and hired himself out to one of the citizens of that country who sent him into the fields to feed pigs. And he was longing to be fed with the pods that the pigs ate, and no one gave him anything. So this is also scandalous, because a Jew had no business associating himself with pigs. They were considered unclean animals. Not only associating yourself, but like at this point, he has hit the lowest of lows, hasn't he? He's like, these pigs actually have it better than I do. Like, what is going on here? But people don't start off by like automatically thinking that they will end up as bad as other people, don't they? Like, this happens over time. And you have to believe that this kid, he goes off and he's like, I got this figured out. And all of a sudden a bad decision happens and this is the effect. And then he takes another step and then this happens. And eventually you get to a place where you're like, whoa, what is going on? Like, how did I get here? How did I get to this place? I remember thinking I was going through this passage, one thing that really caught my eye was that last phrase there when it says, Jesus says, no one gave him anything. It's like they didn't even know he existed. They just completely disregarded him. There was a guy when I lived in Reno, he was always in the same spot, on the same street, like almost every day. And, you know, drive by, you know, and I know there's a lot to the reality and the dynamics of people who are living on the streets, especially these days, mental health issues and different things like that. But one thing that I couldn't help notice was when he was sitting there, nobody else around, he would talk to himself. And it was almost like he was having a conversation with himself. And that really caught my eye. And one day, I just decided to go talk to this guy. And when I approached him, he all of a sudden, it was like a light bulb came on. And he turned, and he started to engage me in a conversation, just a normal conversation. His name was Mark. And it was eye-opening to me that he could go from this place over here where he's in his own world, but then all of a sudden engaging again, and almost like he was in his right mind and he's just having this conversation. And again, there's a lot there that we're not unpacking today. But one thing that I was thinking about with this is somewhere along the way, one of the tragedies is what happens to a person's dignity and their humanity when they eventually are on the down and out and they're living in this kind of life of isolation, life of just all of these series of events that have come a part of their lives. And now all of a sudden, it's almost like sometimes like people realize, I'm not even seen anymore. I'm not the extent of his father's love. That's what sin does. That's what our choices do. That's what the reality of the brokenness in our world does to us. The more we drift away from the Father's love and the Father's care, the further away we go, the less we think that he is still loving and that he loves us, and the less we become human. And this is the kicker this morning. This is what God's desire is for us, is that each and every one of us would be a person marked by love. His love. His sacrificial love. When we think about what it means to be truly human, it is to be deeply abiding in the love of Christ, to receive it and to give it. But we have to receive it first before we can give it. The son, you know, when he left, eventually it's like he realized like everything's gone, everything's wasted, and it's like he believed he wasn't even human anymore. He thought so lowly of himself that he wallowed with pigs who were considered unclean. Henry Nouwen, who's a brilliant writer, he said this about the young brother. When the younger brother or the younger son was no longer considered a human by people, by a human being by the people around him, he felt the profundity, that's a fun word, of his isolation, the deepest loneliness one can experience. He was truly lost. And it was this complete lostness that brought him to his senses. Here's where the story gets good. It finally starts to get good and redemptive. And this is the good news part of it. Let's read in verse 20. It says, he arose, he came to his father, but while he was still a long way off, his father saw him and had compassion for him. And he ran and he embraced him and he kissed him. That'd be kind of weird these days, but, you know, still a good thing. It's a good thing. The son said to him, and he rehearsed this, right? The father, I've sinned against heaven and before you. I am no longer worthy to be called your son. Right? So right before this, it says that he came to his senses, right? And he's like, this is ridiculous. What am I doing? And so he starts to concoct this, like, canned answer, right? Where he's going to go back to his father, hopefully try to like convince him just to be like his hired servants, not even to be back into his home as his child. He's not thinking like he's actually truly been repentant at this point. It's more like, I just want my needs met. I just want to, you know, have a roof over my head. I want to have food in my belly. I want to have clothes on my back. But at this point, the story completely changes. The father doesn't rebuke him. Right? He doesn't say, boy, you stanky, go take a shower first. He doesn't do that. He doesn't want this son of his to go figure out everything first before he comes to him and embraces him in relationship again. He doesn't do that. Right? He doesn't get him to the doorstep and he's not crossing his legs like this, you know, tapping the door frame saying, all right, you got something to explain to me? No, he doesn't do that. In fact, it says he runs to him. In his filth, he runs to him and he kisses him and he embraces him. The ultimate sign of being his beloved and being his child in that moment. But in the story, he doesn't run after him in the beginning, does he? In the story. You notice that? It says that the son asks for his inheritance, demands it, and the father willingly just releases it to him. And he doesn't chase after him. He doesn't argue with him. He doesn't fight. He just lets him have it. But when he returns, when he turns around, he runs after him. That's something in the scriptures that we call repentance. Even though it may not have been a perfect picture in that moment of the heart behind it, he still turned back to his father. And this is an important point for us this morning. God will never force us to follow him. He'll never strong arm us into relationship with him. Eventually, he will let us go our own way. I think of Fleetwood Mac every time I say that. It's a great song. He will allow us to go our own way, won't he? But it will grieve his heart when he knows it's not the way that we're supposed to go. And his grace comes in when there are moments along the way that he actually gives us grace moments, longing for us to be sensitive enough to recognize those moments and in that path that we're on, that, hey, we are going down the wrong road. We are going down the wrong path, but we must choose. And that is a key thing for us this morning. We must choose to follow Jesus. We must choose to have Christ as the King of our lives. But it's not just because he wants to be King of our lives. It's because he knows there is a path that leads to life. But it will always be an invitation. It will always be an invitation for anybody, no matter how far along they've been on that road, there will always be an invitation and a seat at the table. And that is huge for us this morning. This is the ultimate hope of the gospel, isn't it? That there will always be a seat at the table, that in Jesus, because of what he did on the cross and in the resurrection, everyone is welcome to the table. And the beauty is that when our eyes are open to that truth is what is in store for us when we do. Let's look at the rest of this story. Verse 22, it says, but the father said to his servants, quick, bring the best robe, right? Put it on him and put it on a ring on his hand and show it, shoes on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. And let us eat and let us celebrate. For this son of mine was dead, and he is alive again. He was lost and is now found. And they begin to celebrate. So when we look at the life of this younger brother, ultimately, one way or another, this is where we all are. This is the spot that we all are. And the good news is that you cannot outrun and you cannot outdo God's love. You can't. And that's what Jesus is trying to demonstrate here. When he's sitting at the table with the sinners, with the tax collectors, right? We think about the worst of the worst type of people in our lives. And do we believe that God is big enough for his love to reach those people? Do we believe that? When we feel buried in our own shame and our own sin, our own mistakes, do we believe that we can still turn and run towards God, the loving Father that we have, knowing that he will not reject us? The last point I want to make this morning with this is that even in our worst, God still sees you, God still loves you, God still delights in you. This is why we bring things full circle back to this story of Jesus sitting with these people, is because he wants us to know that the story's not done, and we're not done with the whole story. But this morning, ask yourself the question, is, are you there? Do you know people that are there? If you're there, if you feel like you're at that end, that, you know, the end of your rope, right? Just the rock bottom, whatever the case may be, the story's not done. You can turn towards God and there is a seat at the table and he's ready to meet with you. Maybe you know people that are in that boat. And this morning, maybe God is saying, don't give up on them, because God's not giving up on them. The story's not done. Jesus' love extends so far that we cannot outrun it. We cannot outdo it. But yeah, like I said, we're not done with this story. There is a lot that Jesus is saying to all of us here, because if you're not in this boat that we just talked about today with the younger brother, well, guess what? There's an older brother. There's an older brother who's got his own mess, his own situation, his own struggles. And that's why I think it's appropriate that we call this the parable of the two lost sons. They're just lost in different ways. And then thirdly, the last week, we're actually going to look at, okay, now we're looking at the father much more poignantly as far as who he is in the story and how it all comes together. But my hope and prayer is during this series that we can come back to, or for the first time in our heart of hearts, embrace the fact that God's love extends so far. And maybe it's a refresher for you. But the story's not done, and your story's not done. We're going to go into our time of communion together this morning. If you have your elements, if not, Rule has the box there. We do it every week. It's not an obligation. There's no pressure. But we like to do communion here every single week because God says, do this as often as you meet. And so I'm going to call up Bill Grennan, who's going to share this morning for us as we go into our time of communion. But if you need prayer after, we're going to respond in song. Our team will be in the back during that last song. We'd love to pray with you, or afterwards too. That's fine. But afterwards, we invite you to just stick around, have a donut. There's lots, and those are good. Let me tell you, I had one earlier, and some coffee. And we just love to connect. So Bill's up here. Awesome. You want this, Bill? You're good.
I'm good.
He's good. All right.
Okay. Good morning. Listening to Pastor Michael this morning, you know, I'm getting old enough. I got enough years to reflect back, and personally, I've been the one that's taken off down that road and went into things that I shouldn't do. And having spoken to a lot of people, I can't think of a single person that doesn't have a story where they found failure, where they were at the end of the road. Personally, for me, the week that I came to Jesus personally, because I was the opposite of a Christian, not a nice guy, definitely chasing down the wrong roads, doing everything I could to mislead people, to be disruptive. And the morning I heard God talk to me and say, okay, today's your day. You choose. You choose. And one of my favorite things that I heard Pastor Michael say this morning is, the Father didn't stand there and say, tell me a story, go out and fix yourself. God isn't standing there. He didn't stand there and tell me to go out and get my stuff together and fix myself and come back when I'm ready. He ran to me. And as we do communion this morning, regardless of where you are, regardless of the failures, the garbage, there's not a week that goes by I don't make a mistake. I am so grateful. And the time of communion helps me to remember that my God loves me. I am a child of God. And I have a right to be grateful that he calls me and he wants me. And I hope that while we do communion today, that calling and that wanting and that longing of a relationship with each and every one of us just hits you deep in your heart. And it doesn't matter where you are. And as we do communion, let's remember this is the beginning of Jesus beginning that run to each and every one of us. And he took, as he sat at the table, and he took the bread and he broke it and he passed it around. And he's told all of his disciples and all those that were there with him, this is my body. It is going to be broken for you. And then after having passed the bread around, he took the cup and he said, this wine, this is my blood that will be poured out for you.